This interview is brought to you by Panasonic Lumix G cameras for today's photographer. Okay, I'm here with Mr. Stephen Burns. He's a digital artist. He's the author of Photoshop Trickery and Effects. He runs a very popular Photoshop user group down in San Diego. He lectures. He's an educator. He's got DVDs out with the Photoshop Cafe folks. This guy knows photography, 3D, compositing, all this stuff. And he's taken time away from all that stuff I just talked about to talk to me and you, the TWIP listeners, about how he got started in photography and give us some tips about all that stuff that I just talked about. So, Stephen Burns, welcome to This Week in Photo.
Thank you so much, Frederick, for inviting me. This is an exciting opportunity, and I'm planning to have a blast.
You will. This will be good. I mean, I don't know how we're going to squeeze all the stuff I have listed on my sheet of paper to ask you into this time, but we're going to try.
All right.
So let's start off with, you know, we were talking before I clicked the record button about how you and I connected, and I think it was through Facebook. I came across you and I was like, who is this guy? So I clicked through and I went to your website, and here's this, I'm like, he's written, you know, all these books, and you got all these training tutorials out, you're doing workshops, all this stuff. I was thinking, how come I didn't know about Stephen Burns before this? So let's talk about your history. How did you get started in photography? How did
all
you
right.
begin?
You know what? You know, now, before I go there, you're right. Now memory is coming back to me, and you said you found me through Facebook. Mm-hmm. I didn't even know anything about you guys until you contacted me through Facebook. And I decided to go through the link through Facebook to find out who you guys were. And I thought, oh my gosh, this guy has one heck of a broadcast. And it's the quality shows and quality photographers and artists. I thought, well, you know what? I would love to be involved with this thing. So for once again, let me thank you for having me involved. And let me go to answering your question about how did I get involved. My family, my father was a businessman. We had a restaurant for 18 years. It was a Southern food restaurant, and he always wanted me to run the family business, but I had this artistic side of me. I was always drawing and painting, and I was going to school here in San Diego, one of the junior colleges, taking life drawing class with an ex-girlfriend of mine, and one day I decided to buy a camera. It's a camera that I still have. It's the Minolta X7 700 film camera that I bought from, I forget, it was a local store here. It was kind of like a Costco style store, and I decided to use this camera for taking pictures so that I can draw and paint the outcome of the photographs. Yeah. Now, I knew nothing about how to work these dials on the camera. You know, what is an aperture and what is a shutter speed? Had no idea. So I went to the local junior college here, took a beginning color slide course, and I was absolutely hooked on photography.
Wow. And when was this?
Oh, gosh. This was probably back in the early 80s, 1980, 1981.
Uh-oh.
And I pretty much I'm a film guy. I originally began as a film guy, and I took a few more classes. It was a beginning darkroom class, with medium format film. And after two of those classes, I went to my parents and I says, I know you guys want me in the family business, but I really love photography. This is really what I want to do with the rest of my life. When I received their blessings, that was the happiest day of my life. Every day I was excited about what I was going to create and how I was going to produce and what I was going to learn. I took every photography class at one of the local colleges here. This one was Palomar College. At the time, was one of the best photography schools in Southern California. And took every class, commercial, portrait, and fine art class. And, of course, my background started with the fine art, and I went to a gallery, and this is actually before I had chose to be a photographer. I bought this camera, went to Yosemite 1 year with my and the next girlfriend of mine, and we decided to go over to San Francisco since it was so close and to visit and take some pictures. And it happened that over at the DeYoung Museum there was an Ansel Adams exhibit, and I've never seen an Ansel Adams exhibit before.
Yeah,
I walked into this place and saw these mural-sized, magnificent black and white artworks that. When I saw that, that was the defining moment that, okay, this is what I want to do. So I did, so that was when I got into the black and white darkroom classes and couldn't figure out why my work didn't look like his.
So you spent the next several years trying to get to the level of Ansel Adams?
Oh, my gosh. I sure did. And I worked hard at it. And I discovered I needed to study film development. Pushing and pulling film, the effects that pushing and pulling had on the negative. I had my zone system down to a T. I was using T-Max 100 film as my chosen as my film of choice. Yep. We started on the Tri-X 400, which was the beginning level students, and because it was a cheap film and it was
very grainy, right?
Yeah, it was very grainy, but you can hand hold the camera. You didn't have to rely on a tripod, and that was great for the instructors at that time because then we're much more free to actually interpret our vision without the hindrance of a tripod. Although they did, you know, lecture quite a bit about always use a tripod. But anyways, those are the days I was really into photojournalism and taking shots of people and capturing the moment and lighting and so forth. And then I decided, you know what? I love this T-Max 100. Kodak put that out actually closer to the I forget what year they actually put it out, but it was closer to my almost when I was getting ready to graduate. It was later in my career. We were using Plus X film and remember Pentatomic X, and
I
then
loved that was ISO 32.
That's right. That was Ilford, right?
Yep, ISO 32. That was the slowest film that you could get at that time, I think. Right?
That's exactly right. And then it was Tech Pan. Remember that one?
Yep, I do.
ISO what? 25.
Yep. 20. So, yeah, 25. That's right. Yeah.
First, ISO 25. So anyway, I decided to pick up a 4x5 camera before I was really technically ready. My instructors basically was telling me, no, you shouldn't do this. Well, I was stubborn and hard-headed, and I wanted to learn, and I was reading Ansel Adams' books, the film, the negative, the print, and I'm going to learn about what this 4x5 was all about. So I went and bought a used 4x5 camera at one of the local shops, got the used lenses, the film back holders, and loaded it up with T-Max 100. Well, actually, yeah, T-Max 100 film.
Yep.
Okay. So it was an eye opener when I processed the film.
Yeah, because you get this big, giant, beautiful negative that you can see.
Oh my god! Yeah. Oh my gosh! This is beautiful.
You remember retouching the negative?
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, you right now. This is debate in the photographic. What the photographic shows or when you submit work for competition about what you can do in Photoshop and what you can't do in Photoshop. And the things we can actually do a lot in the darkroom. And you look at Jerry Uelsman as an example. There's a lot that you can do in the darkroom that we actually could do in Photoshop, but a lot of people doing Photoshop don't realize that today because they've never had a traditional black and white class to learn how to composite several different images in on one sheet of paper.
Yeah, and there's no undo, right?
Well, there is no undo. Basically, we would buy, 50 sheet box of paper? And technically, well, I tell you what, if you're doing your craft right out of a 50 sheet box of paper, you're really only going to produce maybe at the most 3 images.
Isn't that crazy? And how much did that 50 sheet box of paper cost?
Oh, well, at the time, it was pricey, but it wasn't as it got pricier over the years, but it was, I forget what it cost. I think a 25 sheet box.
It probably came down to like $3 or $4 a sheet.
Yeah, about $3. Yeah. It's been so long ago. Actually, you know, just that's one of the pleasures of digital is that.
So cross reference that, Steven. So look, you know, looking back on what you know about the, you know, the pains and the joys of manual processing, dip and dunk and mixing chemicals and, you know, going through, you know, 30, 40 sheets of paper to get a couple of good prints out of that to today. You know, so looking at the what was, when you spent all that time understanding the zone system from Ansel Adams, and now you have a, you know, I presume a high-end digital camera that has Death Star type processing power inside of it. You know?
So, that's right. Death Star is an understatement.
I know. So how does that change your photography? Has the history and understanding the zone system and processing chemicals and setting up your larger and putting filters in there and all that stuff, has that affected your craft today?
Tremendously. And let me tell you why, because what I'm about to tell you is going to give you a little deeper insight as to where I am and where I'm going with my craft and my vision behind what I'm trying to do. And of course, so my website for the viewers there, you get to, when you get there, you get to look at the fine artwork. It'll give you a better insight as to what I'm about to share with you. I started off as a photographer. One year, I had a solo show at the International University here in, I believe it's Scripps Ranch. And there was a gentleman by the name of Tony DeJesu who had a show, a weekly show on KUSI Channel 51 called The Artist. Mm-hmm. Well, one year they had this show and it was basically a group show of photography. And at the time I was a fairly accomplished black and white photographer doing a lot of works of Death Valley and Yosemite and just in general, just my craft was black and white at the time. I saw this show and I called up Tony DeJesu and said, "Hey, listen, I really should be part of this show." And he goes, "Oh, really? Well, why don't you come over to my house and show me what you have?" So I went to show him my black and white portfolio, and he looked at it and he said, "You know, you really should have been in this show. In fact, I do a television show every week called The Artist. If you would like, I can give you a segment on this show. I can do an hour interview. You'll be on television. And after the interview, I will give you a solo show over at International University."
Nice.
So he did. And, of course, the solo show was accompanied by a nice little luncheon. All the heads of the university came, and it ended up being almost 45 to 50 pieces in the entire – and the gallery was like three huge sections. One gentleman – at the time, he was 91 years old. I didn't know it, but he was this short man, Jewish man. The glasses, like Coke bottle glasses, was up looking very closely at my work and stepped back, and he would look up closely again. And my parents was with me, and I saw this shorter gentleman looking at my work, and I thought, this is interesting. And he walks up to me and says, "Hey, you know, this is pretty interesting. You know, I'm doing a style of photography that no one's ever done before. I'm working with techniques that make photography look like painting." And I thought, "Huh, okay." I said, "So what?" He says, "Well, come over to my place and take a look at it." Well, he lived in Oceanside. I went up to his home and I saw these huge paintings on the wall. And I said, "These are wonderful paintings that you do." And he says, "Those are not paintings. That is photography." I said, "What?" Right. He goes, "It's photography." I said, "Well, then how did you do it?" He says, "Well, I have a technique. And if I met the right person, I would share that technique with him." So he invited me to mentor under him for a whole summer and to learn this technique. Now, the technique was basically involved destroying negatives, destroying transparencies, ripping them up and tearing them up and sandwiching them back together again to create something unique. Hmm. The gentleman knew a lot of a number of the modern artists in New York during the Depression, Jackson Pollock and Juan Miró, those types there. Hmm. And he was a painter by tradition. He was highly influenced by the modern abstract movement. So he says, "This is where my inspiration comes from." And he had a whole library of art books. And we sat down every night for that whole summer, and we started with Cézanne, and walked and worked all the way through to the modern American abstraction movement.
Steven, you know what this sounds like? This sounds like photography meets Karate Kid.
Is it something like that?
That's what it sounds like. This is a script. It might be the next Kill Bill or something.
Well, thinking about Kill Bill, we had Knocked Down Drag Eye Fights about artistic interpretation, philosophy, what photography should be, where it should be going. He had his opinions about photography and art. I had my opinions about photography and art because I was trained as a traditional photographer to actually, the negative is pristine, the negative is gold. You don't destroy it. I mean, this is your vision, where in the American abstractionist movement, what was going on is the Americans couldn't get in the galleries during the time because the Europeans came over and took the gallery space during the war. So they had to create something that was going to speak out louder than what Paris was basically pontificating to the world, this whole concept of plein air painting, how to prepare the canvas properly, how to paint and create from life. And the American abstractionist says, you know what, screw painting from life. We're going to create energy from our heart, from our gut. We're going to throw dyes on it and burn up the canvas and use collages and dirt. And we're going to create artworks that are emotional and aggressive. And it's going to be in the face of Paris.
It sounds like the Renaissance. Right.
It's exactly in so to speak. So that was what my mentor was getting at. He was a real stickler on being unique. Wow. in that you work from your unique personality that reflects the day and time that you live in. Your work should reflect not only that day and time, but beyond. And what better materials to work with for this purpose than to work with photographic materials?
Yeah. So then going through all that, you know, you absorbed all, you had the knockdown drag out fights, but you came out the other side with a body of knowledge and experience to help you create these incredible images that people can go see on your site at chromeillusion.com.
Correct.
So let's talk about today. So fast forward today. So now you are, like I mentioned in the intro there, you're writing books, you got DVDs out, you're doing training. Now, are you now mentoring people? Are you getting the word out about these techniques that you learned to different folks, or how is that working?
Absolutely. First of all, besides being the president of the San Diego Photoshop Users Group, when I started the group, there was about 15 individuals involved. I built it up to 4,000 members. We meet once a month here in San Diego. It's free to join, sdphotoshopusers.com. And we're the largest San Diego Photoshop users group in the nation. Now, this is a way in which I share my knowledge and also get other professionals to come and share their knowledge for free. Now, another way that I share my knowledge, I'm also an official instructor at West Coast Schools this year. Actually, on the front page of my website, there will be a link to West Coast Schools. You can check that out. And what that is a 1 week long intensive class on Photoshop. It's called From Basics to Beyond. Now, this is how I teach. Just as a painter understands his medium, how to apply paints to canvas, what brand names the paints to use, how to take these pigments to create texture and form and beauty. Because they understand their medium, we as digital artists must understand our medium. And this is one of the problems I've been having with a lot of the Photoshop instruction that I'm seeing. I'm seeing a lot of photographers who learn a few techniques about that works really well for them and come off as Photoshop experts.
Right. Yeah, you learn, okay, I was talking about this with a friend before, like a photographer will learn, or someone will learn parts of Photoshop, like they may understand layers and get their brain around layers, or they may get their brain around channels, or how to use the curves in Photoshop, or whatever, you know.
Right.
And then try to apply that particular knowledge to everything in Photoshop. Like, okay, now I'm going to make a black and white image. Okay, I'm going to use the levels or the layers tool to do that. You know. So it's you're right. So I think in order to be well-rounded, you need to have. You don't need to know everything about Photoshop, because I don't even know if that's possible, but you need to have a well-rounded understanding of the metaphor that the program is operating under, and at least a cursory understanding of all the tools that are in there.
When I started to delve into color as an art form, I started to get into Photoshop in version 2.5. Now, this is before Zip Disk existed. This is before CD-ROM existed. Your hard drive.
Photoshop 2.5 was before layers. So
exactly.
Layers showed up in Photoshop 3, right?
Exactly. I mean, I started working with it, and for 2 years, I stopped doing photography. And all I did was delve into Photoshop, trying to figure out what this whole digital game is all about. How do I intuitively create the way I was intuitively creating as a photographer? I understood photography from the chemicals. I was creating my own developers, color and black and white, from scratch. I understood the chemical compounds. I understood how the camera worked. I understood how the negative or the transparency was going to respond to light, and how to anticipate what I was going to achieve as an end result. I needed to understand the digital tools the exact same way. No different, as I mentioned earlier, than how a painter understands his pigments to canvas. Mm-hmm. It took a long time to figure that out.
Yeah.
Because this whole digital game is extremely technical, and there's a high learning curve. So I took off 2 years every day just doing nothing but figuring out where I needed to go with this whole digital creative game.
Yeah. So then again, we're in the present, and you are, you know, you understand your craft. You sort of got your brain around the type of photography that you want to do. So what is your vertical? You know, a lot of photographers say, you know, I like shooting landscapes. I like shooting models. I like shooting macro. What is Stephen Burns' sort of vertical?
How does Stephen Burns differ from everyone else? Most people are relying on the single concept or the single image to define who they are as photographer, photographic artists. I won't. I'm relying on a variety of imagery. I'm relying on my final vision not representing any one photograph. Any one of the artworks that you see in my site does not rely on any one, two, or three images, but a heck of a lot more.
Yeah. So you don't pigeonhole yourself into one particular vertical. You are
you're
an image maker, and whatever you feel like making, you'll make that. But you're not going to say, okay, I'm a landscape photographer, so I can't take pictures of that model over there because she's not a landscape.
Well, that's exactly correct. I enjoy shooting nudes, for example, because I take those nudes and I'll blend them with all types of textures so that they're no longer nudes but become a whole other art form.
Yeah. That's cool.
Okay.
That's cool.
Okay. So I'm about using photography as my medium to create a whole new vision. Why? Why am I doing this? For the first time in history, all creative art forms that we as humans understand can now be done in one little box called a computer. Drawing, painting, filmmaking, poetry, architecture, photography.
Not sculpture.
That's right. It's creating a whole new breed of artists. People who would never pick up a paintbrush in the past will now do it in Photoshop or a painter program. Yeah. People who would never pick up a chisel to sculpt will now do it in a 3D program.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think I coined the phrase, I think it was a year or two ago, that photographers are no longer just photographers, we're multimediographers, which means we need to understand many mediums to communicate our whatever vision that we have in our head out, whether it's video, stills, audio, 3D, whatever. You know, it's just, they're all pixels, you know.
But the final vision in most cases, do not reflect the concept that you've just mentioned.
Yeah.
This multimediographer, right? What's happening is photographers are taking what they've already been doing and film and just putting it into digital.
Yeah.
Okay. And painters are doing what they've already done on canvas and just recreating as digital. Well, we're just touching a small aspect of what's capable in this machine. We can use all creative mediums. Okay. That means why can't we take them all and blend it together and create a whole new voice, a whole new vision?
Yeah.
But this is a big fight. Photographers are still hanging on to what is photography and what defines a photograph. And those who want to break free of this stigma and create something more exciting end up being taken by the painting galleries as opposed to the photographic galleries.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a line there, because there's, you know, you look at photography from like a 30,000 foot level, and there's the photographers that are documenting, you know, they're out shooting pictures, like the war photographers and people that are shooting for National Geographic and trying to document and record something exactly as it was seen to bring things that people wouldn't ordinarily see to light. And then there's the artists as
right.
well that are creating original works, you know, and mixing and matching and sort of throwing things in a blender and coming out with something completely new. And
yes.
That's what you're talking about.
Yes, absolutely correct.
Yep. So then let's talk about the workshops that you do. So you do,
all right.
I was looking at your site. There's my finger got tired from scrolling down the page because there's so many workshops on there. Tell me about those, and what do you do in your average workshop?
All right. My workshops, all of them, with the exception of the Death Valley class, actually, I've just set the new date for the Death Valley Excursion Workshop. That's going to be in October 26th through 29th. We'll start with that one since that one's at the top of the page. And basically, that workshop accompanies a whole Photoshop class. And Death Valley has always been one of my favorite places to shoot. I've been going there for over 20 years. And I take out a group of 12 students maximum to getting up early in the morning and shooting later in the day, sand dunes and volcanic landscapes and the ancient ruins, just the majesty of Death Valley. And then every day that we're together, every afternoon, we have a critique of our work. I allow them to choose two images from what they've done that day, what they consider their best, and we critique them as a group, as a class.
Yeah.
On the last day, which is Saturday, we have I reserved an auditorium, which we have a screen and digital projector, where we have a Photoshop course, a 3-hour Photoshop course, actually 3 to 4 hour Photoshop course, I should say. It often goes over on how to enhance your work from Death Valley in Photoshop, but from a standpoint of understanding what you're doing in Photoshop, why you're applying what you're doing to enhance your work, techniques that's going to help enhance the desert landscape that you photographed.
Yeah.
Okay. So, that's the Death Valley class. Now, I also have a beginning Photoshop class for those who have little or no experience in Photoshop. I interview everybody before they take the classes. And these are all 5-week classes. So we meet one day a week for 5 weeks. It's the only way you're really going to wrap your head around this stuff. That one won't start till September 19th. That, of course, that'll be coming up pretty soon. And that's a Monday night, 7 o'clock in the evening to 9 o'clock in the evening. And again, this is going to give the student finally a foundation as to how and why Photoshop works. After that, they have the choice to go directly into the intermediate class. The intermediate class takes off where the beginning class ends. Now, in the beginning class, let me go back a little bit. Mm-hmm. Day one of the beginning class is learning about layers. Okay, layers are critical. Learning about the concept of selections. Something I've always coined in my books, and I always coin it to my students in person, that the key to mastering Photoshop is mastering selections, and that selections and masks is exactly the same concept.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll start that in the beginning class. We'll learn layers. We'll learn compositing, how to use your photographic imagery and your imagination to create something a little more artistic. And it, and the class is also for those who may not necessarily get into the compositing, but is they will learn and understand Photoshop. And we go into the intermediate class. That's where we start to understand this whole concept of the use of layer masks and layer blend modes. Yeah. Okay, getting a deeper understanding and also a creative edge on where Photoshop is going. The intermediate class is required that all students have a Wacom tablet. And the Wacom tablet is my tool of choice, which basically integrates the traditional way of working with the digital way of working. It's critical for us as artists. It's a wonderful tool. And for those who are using, so for those out there who may not know what a Wacom tablet is, it's a W-A-C-O-M, it's basically using a pen like a brush and using pressure to apply painting strokes without having to go back to your options menu to adjust your opacity, yeah, your options bar. So it's a wonderful little tool. And then we go right after the intermediate class is over. They have the advanced class where we go heavily into masking and channels and pulling together this concept of the key to mastering. So Photoshop is mastering selections, and then that selections and masks and channels are all the same concept. So what I'm doing is I'm pulling it all together so that the student finally figures out, oh my gosh, so this is what's really going on in the program. So if that's true, then I can create in all these different ways and all these concepts should work. I teach conceptually. If a student wants to learn a step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 technique, they can get it from any book on the market. They don't need me.
Yeah.
But I'm going to give you a deep understanding into what's going on and why.
So I wanted to get into, so beyond the workshops, I wanted to just get a little deeper into the tools that you use. I want to be respectful of your time, so I want to wrap it after this. But like we talk a lot about on This Week in Photo, you know, there's people that are using Lightroom and passionate about Lightroom, and there are people that are using Aperture and just love Aperture to death. And then there's some people that don't use either. They're just using Bridge, you know, directly out of Photoshop and processing their images. Can you give me a rundown or give us a rundown of what your workflow is? So you're out shooting at one of your workshops. What's next after you have your compact flash card in your hand and it's time to look at the images?
Okay. All right. I mean, for years we've been using Bridge and ACR, Adobe Camera Raw, to organize our images. Yep. And before Lightroom came along, all of a sudden Lightroom comes along and combines basically Bridge and ACR. That's all Lightroom is. It's just Bridge and ACR put together. In my Lightroom class that I teach that's coming up in June, in fact, I go through Bridge, I go through ACR, and then we go right into Lightroom and we say, hey, guess what? Same language, same organization, it's the exact same thing, no different. So how does Lightroom differ from ACR and Bridge in Photoshop? It's very simple. Lightroom is a database program. It allows you to keep track of your photos and organize your photos so that it's just much more content management oriented. Okay. So yep. I use both. I use Bridge to basically organize things. Once I have everything organized in the respective folders, I go into Lightroom, import them into my database so that I can keep track of everything where they are.
Right.
Basically in a nutshell.
Okay. Okay. So then let's talk a little bit about once you have everything in there, you've organized your images and you've developed them. What are you using to store your images? Like hard drive wise?
Oh yeah, I'm using pretty much most hard drives on the market is pretty good. I use Seagate drive. They're 1 terabyte to 2 terabyte Seagate drives, mm-hmm. And I do the tertiary, you know, the 3 storage concept where mm-hmm. I have it backed up. I have one main set of disks that I work off regularly. Then I have a backup of those on another set of hard drives. And then I will back those up on DVDs. Good. And or a third hard drive, which is what I might consider doing because DVDs are kind of take a lot of time.
Yeah.
To burn those things.
Yes, they do. I can't remember the last time I burned a DVD. I'm done with the optical media. It's gone.
Exactly. So it's just like yourself. I mean, most photographers, we're just burning, just backing up everything on 2 to 3 different hard drives.
Got it. Okay, so let's wrap it up. I want to give people locations where they can find out more about Stephen Burns. Where can people go to find out what you're up to and see your work and all the things that you've been talking about in terms of the techniques that you learned from your mentor and all that?
All right, great. First of all, you have my website, which is thechromeillusion.com, which represents color abstractions, chromeillusion.com. Everything is there, especially go to my workshop pages. Go to the tutorial section where there's all types of free video tutorials for you to take a look at. Hopefully they'll inspire you to take the workshops. Second of all, you can find me on Facebook. I believe that's Chromeillusion as well on Facebook. And you can also find me on Twitter at Chromeillusion as well. And I guess sdphotoshopusers.com. SD is in San Diego, Photoshop Users with an S.com. I'm the president of the San Diego Photoshop Users Group. You can come and join us. It's free. We have some great presenters. We meet 12 to 3 o'clock in the afternoon, usually the first Saturday of the month, over at the Art Institute of California headquarters in San Diego, Mission Valley.
That's cool. That's a lot of stuff. So my last question is, so Flickr, Facebook, Twitter, blogs, yep, user yep, groups, workshops, books, DVDs, and you're shooting regularly. How do you find time for all this stuff?
Oh, it's very simple. You don't have kids. And you can have a heck of a lot of time with
it. I knew something had to give. And I heard you mention in the beginning of the interview, you mentioned two ex-girlfriends.
No, exactly.
I see what's happening here, Steve.
You have to. I mean, that's the nature of artists. Well, you have to be. Our art's more important.
All right. So I'm not commenting on that one. You're on your own right there.
you can't comment on it.
I cannot comment on that one. No. All right, man. Well, thank you so much. Thanks for taking the time this evening to speak with me. This has been a great interview.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Steven.